to Brotherly Pod. Here it is, Tuesday, April 30, 2024. It's actually Sunday right now, but we'll keep that between you and me. Going up on Tuesday, April 30. And I am back again, flying solo, because we got some things to talk about this week about the Philadelphia Flyers. And you know what? We're not even going to start talking about the Flyers. We're going to start talking about the Lehigh Valley Phantoms, who eliminated the Wilkes-Barre Scranton Penguins in two games in their best-of-three series. They swept the series, played at the PPL Center on Friday night, the first home game in the Valley in 6 years. And, man, I was there in the building for that game, and what a night it was. The Phantoms played like shit for about 45 minutes. The Penguins took two penalties. Phantoms had a 5-on-3, which they scored two goals in about 22 seconds. Capitalized on both of those, got themselves right back into it. And eventually the game went to overtime, where Jacob Gauthier got the winner and eliminated the Penguins. And it was a rough start to that game. And I had considered leaving about midway through the third period. It was just one of those games where they were struggling to complete a pass. The Penguins were just on them. It looked bad. It looked like they knew that there was a Game 3 coming, and we didn't need to win this one, so we're not going to, kind of thing. But then that 5-on-3 happened. I'm like, fine, I'll give them an opportunity. If they don't capitalize on this, you know, now or never, kind of thing. And they did. And they ended up winning. So they take on the Hershey Bears next. Don't have good feelings about that one. I don't think the betting odds are strong that the Phantoms walk away with a win. That is a best of five series, by the way. But the Hershey Bears finished the season 53-14-5. Just an insane. I believe they were far and away the best team in the AHL. They were one of two teams, the other being the Coachella Valley Firebirds, to break the 100-point mark on the year, which was last year's Calder Cup final, was the Firebirds and Bears, and could very well be that again this season. But we get at least one more game in Lehigh Valley. Game 3 would be in Lehigh on May. I pull out the dates here. Game 1 and 2 are at Hershey on Wednesday and Saturday, May 1 and 4. Game 3 is at Lehigh Wednesday, May 8. Game 4, if necessary, would also be at Lehigh Saturday, May 11. So provided the Phantoms win one of those first three games, there will be two more playoff games in Lehigh this year, which is pretty cool. It was a very interesting environment. The playoff game on Friday, that was not the most full I've seen that building this year. It wasn't barren. It was probably more than three quarters full, but it was not a sellout, which was kind of interesting. But man, that crowd was rowdy. There were some angry, angry people there. Then got more diehards than I think you do during the season. The people that actually understand the sport versus just going to spend their night at a hockey game because it's the local thing to do. But yeah, there was some very restless, angry people in that crowd during that game. And they had every reason to be. The Phantoms, yeah, it was that brutal, brutal start to that game. But they did win. So we get one more, which I'm excited about. I will be there as well on May, 8? Whatever it was. But, May 8 and the 11 then. So, God, apparently there was a lot of complaining from the Penguin side, both fans and coaching staff, after the game about how that game and really the series was officiated. J.D. Forrest and Sheldon Brookbank there were not happy about it. But I don't know. I mean, I'm looking at the report here. I mean, the Penguins did draw three consecutive penalties in the third period, and two of those the Phantoms scored on, which would have been the 5-on-3. And then there was a matching minor for unsportsmanlike conduct and slashing from Ginning and Pusatin, which is a hell of a name, by the way. But I don't know. I felt like the officiating, and like, I think AHL officiating in general is a mess, and it's on display more often than not. I think anybody that, you know, consumes that product regularly would probably tell you the same thing, that it's a bit of a mess. But I don't know. I didn't feel like there was a whole lot in this game that was wrong. You know, once you start getting into, well, this wasn't called. Well, you go back into, well, that, why wasn't this one called? And I don't know. There's a lot of things. Jitting had three penalties in that game, by the way, which was not great. But yeah, I don't know. Everything was called regularly. I think there was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 Phantoms penalties called. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 Penguins called, one of them being the matching penalty there. So I don't know. I mean, the third period definitely didn't do them wonders, but there was a lot of complaints. Oh, the refs gave them this game. And, I mean, the Penguins were leading 3-1 at the end of the second period. And they were dominating that game. I mean, there is no excuse why they should have lost. You know, sure, the Phantoms were able to capitalize on their power play, which was like 0 for 28 or something, 0 for 31, whatever it was, going into the last bit here, because of, you know, which was weird because they had a top five power play for a little while at the beginning of the season and just kind of fell off the truck there towards the end of the year. But they scored when it mattered most, and credit to Tanner Lyzinski, man. He had 2 goals in that game, and, you know, I sang his praises in the last prospect report on the website, BradleyPuck.com, in the season. But, like, this guy, after what he had been through with the Flyers, and they just said, no, you're not going to play for us ever again, and send him back down there, he had every reason to not work hard this year. And, man, he put that team on his back for most of the year. And, you know, unfortunately, he missed maybe, what was it, 6, 7, 8 weeks with injury there. But on the whole, like, this guy worked his ass off this year. He had 17 goals, 44 points in 49 games, both of which were easily new career highs at the AHL or NHL level, for that matter. Looks good. He has 2 points in 2 games through these Calder Cup playoffs thus far, and will obviously be looked upon highly here going into the Hershey series. So, well done, Tanner Lyzinski. You know, I cannot imagine he re-signs at this point this summer. I don't think the Flyers want him back. I don't think he wants back. He'd probably look elsewhere. But at the end of the day, you know, he's doing a very good job given the situation, and definitely deserves a little bit of credit for that. But just for completion's sake, the Hartford Wolfpack and Charlotte Checkers, their best-of-3 series is tied at 1. I believe they play later today, which is Sunday, and they will play Providence then. So that is how the East is shaking out. The Atlantic Division, I should say. Not necessarily the East, and you got the North Division as well. But, you know, so Phantoms Hershey Bears to look forward to. So we shall see how that series plays out here over the coming couple weeks. Other things to talk about. We'll start with the league-wide news. Jake Voracek retired after 1,058 NHL games, 727 of which came for the Philadelphia Flyers from 10 years between 2011 to 2021. And, you know, any longtime listeners out there know that I was not the biggest fan of Jake Voracek. He was a classic example of a guy that I just look at and go, why were you not better than you were? And, you know, he racked up some points. He had multiple 20-goal seasons here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, it looked like. Just six 20. Six of his 10 seasons were 20 goals. He was regularly hitting 60 points, broke 80 points twice. You know, just one of those guys. He was like Kevin Hayes, you know. I remember using this example on a freaking Flyer a little while ago, probably last summer at this point, when Kevin Hayes was moved. But it's just like, if he put more effort in, if he just gave a shit more often and played harder regularly, I would probably look back on Jake Voracek much more fondly. But man, he used to drive me nuts back in the day. Remember when our biggest problems were Jake Voracek's work ethic? Ugh, man, what I wouldn't give to go back to those days when Jake Voracek's laziness was problem number one around here. But yeah, he retires. It's unfortunate, right? And it was head injuries. Got a concussion, I believe, in one of the Global Series games, if I remember correctly. So, sucks that he could not go out on his terms. But, you know, after 1,000 games in a 15-year career, you know, it's not like it was cut short either. So, you know, he was, assistant coaching with Jaromir Jagr's team, right? He wasn't even in Arizona to write out the last bit of his contract. You know, he was a Coyote, by the way. What? On that famous Coyote All-Star team that never played for the Coyotes. Yeah. R.I.P. Arizona Coyotes. Still mourning that loss. But so Jake Voracek gone. I think it's probably the biggest news in former Flyer land thus far this week. But transitioning towards some Flyer stuff. Anthony DeMarco put out a piece sometime last week, kind of giving some insight on what the Flyers offseason could potentially look like. And the three names that he said they were listening to were Scott Laughton, Morgan Frost, and Joel Farabee, which is interesting. I mean, Farabee, I'd written a piece about him last week because I think he's the most interesting of the three. They are accumulating a lot of random 50-point middle six wingers. And this is gonna have to give at some point. Something's gonna have to give. They're gonna have to start shedding bodies eventually. They just re-signed Owen Tippett forever. They are probably gonna re-sign Travis Konecny forever, as early as this July, but sometime over the next year is more than likely. And they seem to really like Tyson Forrester, who still has 1 year left on ZLC before he becomes an RFA. Assumingly will get re-signed to another lifetime contract because it's all they know how to do. But it does mean that you're going to have to cave somewhere. Something's going to have to be moved in order to make upgrades, in order even just for Michkov to show up in a couple years and make those moves. And Farabee then becomes the odd man out because everyone is apparently locked into that same spot, right? So, Farabee, the big hindrance here with moving this guy, 4 years left on his contract and a $5 million AAV cap hit, which is not necessarily egregious, but it's not great. He has hit 50 points just once in his career, which was his past season. 22 goals, 50 points were new career highs in both, as were his assists with 28. Previous career high was 20 goals and 39 points, which came over two different seasons. First year where he was uninjured, last year he came back from his neck problem, somehow managed to play in all 82 games. He played in all 82 games this year as well, and it's just kind of a dude, man. The obviously thing there, most of his points came at even strength, which is true. He only had only seven of his 50 points came on the power play, which is just, the Flyers' biggest problem in general is their lack of power play production, right? But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I would assume they're listening on Farabee, but I don't think it's entirely possible he gets traded for relative help. Another guy in their early, mid-ish 20s, the 24, 25-year-old range, same as Farabee, who can probably play center. We talked about Martin Necas both on the website and in the last episode of Burley Pod that I recorded by myself. And, how a swap like that could happen, whether it would be one for one or some roundabout way of getting Farabee off the team and Necas on the team and then convert Necas back to a center, something like that. I think that's totally possible. But that contract really hinders their ability to easily move the guy. If he was making like $2.5 million for four more years, I think he would be pretty easy to move. I think most teams would be all aboard a 50-point 24-year-old with potential upside under contract for 4 years with that term at a reasonable dollar value. That $5 million, though, I think that's going to suck. So we shall see how that one falls out. The other two, I've been predicting for months that the Flyers are going to trade Morgan Frost this summer. And I still, again, if they're looking for an upgrade at center, you kind of have your hands tied here. Sean Couturier is not going anywhere. Even if he's just your 4C now, he's not going anywhere. He's got six more years left at $7.7 million, and the fucking captaincy for some reason. It's a different can of worms for a different day, but still, under contract, he's not going anywhere. Nobody's going to want him. You got Ryan Poehling, whom they re-signed earlier in the year. Was it back in February or something? 2 years, $1.9 million AAV. This guy was essentially serving as your top center for the last little while of the season there, which, speaks to how shitty your center depth is that Ryan Poehling is your number one. But they clearly like this guy. He's not going anywhere. The other one is Scott Laughton, which we will talk about in a minute. But, Noah Cates has played center occasionally. Laughton has played center. It's such a weird, because they've got no help coming internally. You know, Elliot Desnoyers' stock fell tremendously. You really don't have any other notable centers, even at the AHL level. Nobody's really making the jump immediately. You know, there's talk whether or not Michkov will play center when he arrives, but that's 2 years from now. You know, it's way too long to even try and pencil him into this lineup, theoretically. You've got to figure something out in the short term here. And that means that Morgan Frost is kind of on the hook there. And, you know, they're in a weird spot. I mean, what is his trade value individually right now? This guy is still just a 40-point dude. You know, he has his highlight moments that I'm sure some shithead on Twitter, probably Bill Meltzer, put together. It was just 10 minutes of jerking off content of his highlights, but the rest of his on-ice time there is mediocre at best. You know, individually, I just can't imagine he's got a lot going for him right now in a trade. He does have 1 year left on his contract, 2.1 mil for next year, and he's still an RFA at the end of in the 2025 summer at the end of his contract. So I don't know. I could totally foresee Morgan Frost not coming back, even if it's just for coaching-related reasons. I mean, we've seen Tortorella before, last summer with Hayes and Provorov there. If you don't agree with Tortorella, well, it's your turn to get off the bus. And I think there's still... I think Frost came a long way this year in the eyes of Tortorella. From where we started in October to where we finished in April, I think it's a long way, but I don't know if it's enough. You know, I still think if Tortorella had his druthers, which he fucking clearly does with this roster and this team and this, you know, say in how things get constructed, my guess is they wouldn't want him here. So, I don't know, maybe partner Frost and Farabee together. I think that's probably the way to get the max value out of that. What you get in return for something like that, who the fuck knows? I can't imagine. I still just can't imagine. It's a lot, you know, just various rehab projects of similar stature on a different team. Find me another center that's a 40-point guy, 25 years old, struggling on his team, needs a new change of scenery. You know, same thing for Farabee, you know, 24-year-old, 50-point winger on this team, struggling. It's just, that would be, I assume, what those deals are for. I don't think you're walking away with a bunch of high draft picks. I don't think you're walking away with a net positive trade, as in getting a, you know, top six bona fide center to trade for Morgan Frost. It's just not going to happen. You know, you're in a weird spot with those two, and how Briere gets value out of those deals. And listen, I am all for just rearranging deck chairs at this point. If you want to replace 50-point Joel Farabee with 50-point Martin Etches and just call it, hey, I don't know if that's a great idea in terms of forward propulsion, if you actually take a step forward because of that, but it's different, which is totally fine by me at this point. It may not be, you know, the home run recipe, but it's good enough for now, right? Lawton is the other name that came up, and that's an interesting one. I do not believe for a second they trade Scott Lawton. Does anybody believe that they actually trade Scott Lawton? They would legitimately pull the trigger on this guy. And yes, we're trading Lawton for insert return here. I think after the 2023 offseason and the potential rumored returns that they shot down for this guy, the first round pick plus a second round pick, the this and that, the crazy shit that was coming from the rumor mill last summer around Lawton, and they said, nope, we want him because he's a leader. I was like, well, I think you closed the door on that one. And, you know, I predicted going into the deadline. Any regular listeners know I did not expect Lawton to get traded to the deadline. And he didn't, for the same exact reason. He's a leader. We can't trade him. You know, his play fell off a cliff last year, which is funny because I believe he actually had very similar points to his career best 2 years ago. But his play was not nearly as good. He was not nearly as dominant. But because he was like the only center available at the deadline, it temporarily reinflated his trade value. And they said, no, we're keeping him because he's a leader. He's too important. He deserves to be here for this playoff push. Which, you know, some good that did them with the benefit of hindsight. Lawton had 13 goals and 39 points, which was his second best point outcome. His previous career high last year was 43, but 39 would have been far and away second best. Yeah, 13 goals was tied for his second best output back in 1920 with 13 and 18 last year. So points-wise, he actually did not finish off a whole lot worse. His average ice time went from 18-17 down to 15-39. And yeah, it was surely, he was not seeing the ice time that he was last year. He was not seeing the role on the team that he was last year, and definitely did not look good through parts of the season there, and they still said no. So I'm sure they're listening on Lawton, but Briere himself said as much, that unless they severely overpay, nobody's getting Lawton because they respect him too much. And nobody's going to overpay for Lawton anymore. I think you missed that boat last summer. And, I mean, shit. If a first-round pick and second-round pick aren't enough to pry Lawton away anyway, then what could they possibly be asking for? Two firsts? You know, a first and a top prospect or something like that? It's just stuff that is never going to happen. So, I mean, should they be trading Lawton this summer? Yeah! Absolutely. They should have done it last summer. You know, the whole thing at the time was, well, if they're going to re-sign Poehling, that means that you got to ditch Lawton. You know, you can justify signing Poehling at 1.9 mil for 2 years. If you get rid of Lawton's contract, which has 3 years left, for two more years, next season and the following. And, I mean, listen, there's probably something is there with this leadership, especially for this organization that is pushing culture as hard as they are. If he's a respected leader, then you're just going to kind of deal with it for now. But, you know, this is one of those decision-making abilities. You know, they got to be able to know when to hold them and when to fold them, as, you know, Kenny Loggins once said. Loggins? Rogers? Kenny? Rogers? Loggins? It doesn't fucking matter. They're all the same person, right? But, you know, we shall see. I don't think Lawton's going anywhere. I would be stunned if they traded Lawton this summer. And I just think the other two are possibilities. What they end up doing with someone like Cam Atkinson is interesting. And, you know, I don't think Lawton's going anywhere. I think they've balked one too many times to sit here and just believe that this is the summer that all of a sudden they're going to trade Lawton, especially if the value's low. You know, this was not a career year for Lawton. You know, I guess if you're just looking at his points, you go, hey, he didn't fall that far behind. You know, he can still continue something out of him. And I still think that if they waited until a trade deadline, that's probably their best bet for getting the most value out of Lawton. I think teams are more desperate for that type of depth leadership role at the deadline than they are in the offseason. A little more desperate to overpay for that role is probably the better way to phrase that. But, you know, I don't know. I just don't believe it. I don't believe they're moving Lawton until I see it. And if they're just accepting that he's going to be a random depth guy and see out his contract here for two more years, I mean, it is what it is. But it's another one of those deals that you're looking at and going, $3 million for your fourth liner, essentially. It's just, I don't know, man. These deals are starting to add up. You know, Couturier at 4C being flanked by Lawton and Hathaway is a, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, about $14 million fourth line, give or take. It's just, it's too much, man. There's just too much money invested in a lot of these random forwards, and we shall see how they negotiate their way through this one this year. And you know, as I talked about on the last solo show that I did, like, they're not in immediate financial danger, but boy howdy, if they don't figure this out soon, and then Travis Konecny's extension comes along, Forrester and York are both due contracts next summer as well as RFAs, so just any general adds, if they choose to do so, come along. I mean, there's a lot of pressure here that this organization is going to have to start dealing with when it comes to these contracts, and they're going to have to make decisions. Maybe they don't want to move Lawton, but they're going to have to, just to clear out that damn $3 million that he's being paid. And the longer they wait, I mean, if they do not trade him this summer, go into next year, and his value falls again, it may be hard to even move him at the deadline for $3 million. You may find yourself retaining half of his contract for a full another year just to move him. You have 1.5 in dead cap on the books to move Lawton because they waited, you know, 2.5 years too long to move him. So, I don't know. We shall see, but those are the names that are theoretically highlighting the Flyers trade situation here before the offseason approaches. So, but, yeah. Man, anybody watching playoff hockey? I've been watching some playoff hockey. And if there's one thing I've learned watching playoff hockey, is that the Philadelphia Flyers had absolutely no business participating in playoff hockey. Whew! I would not have loved their odds against either the Rangers or the Hurricanes, for that matter. You know, those fringe teams that snuck in above the Flyers, Islanders, and Capitals there. Not looking great in those roles. You know, they're not... There's a very clear line between the have and have-nots in those playoff pictures. And, man, watching some of those teams, especially out west, Vegas go to work, and Vancouver, Dallas, just these teams are so fucking good. Panthers, and, man, it is a completely different level. As much as Flyers fans love to sit here and circle jerk around Morgan Frost's 40 points and Travis Konechny's 60 points and work ethic and Nick Seeler blocking shots, all this shit. I mean, it is not good enough at all compared to what these playoff teams need to be at. And I'm sure that's something that we'll talk about on other shows here as the playoffs continue. But even just through the first round, it's kind of a good thing this season ended when it did and they did not make the postseason, because it would have been 2 weeks of unnecessary pain we had to sit through watching the Rangers just toy with these idiots. But, yeah. One other thing I wanted to touch upon here before the end. I was listening to Chael Sonnen's podcast, which is my lasting tie to MMA. I don't really pay much attention to it anymore regularly, and haven't for quite a few years, probably since before the pandemic. Whenever the Bellator Heavyweight Grand Prix was 2018, 2019-ish, was the last time that I really kept tabs on MMA as a sport. But I still listen to Chael Sonnen's podcast just to, you know, stay in the loop of what it is that they're doing. But his most recent episode, he had a couple quotes here that I wanted to read. I went through, listened back, and transcribed them because I thought that he was making a lot of really good points. And I think a lot of it applies to the sports business in general. He was going to talk about MMA specifically, but consider this hockey. It's just every value of sport. He said, and I quote, "You would not believe how many executives in MMA, people who have spent 20 years at the highest of levels, do not understand what it is we are doing here. They do not understand the psychology of the fan, of the consumer, or the sponsor. They do not know what it takes to build anticipation. They don't even know that the key to the industry, if you're talking about monetization, has to be that very word, anticipation. It can't be excitement. It can't be greatness. It can't be a spectacle. It can't be anything that you see on the internet after it has concluded. It has to be a feeling that comes prior to make you buy the ticket, to pick up the t-shirt, to host the party, to push the buy button. It has to be ahead of time." And the reason that phrase, that couple paragraphs there resonated with me is because I feel like that is still something that the Flyers are missing greatly. Anticipation. The idea that I want to rush home from work and turn the television on to watch the Flyers play at night. That is still missing. There's nothing that they have right now that makes me go, man, I'm going to turn on the television and I'm going to watch them play the night. I'm excited for it. You know, I had people all season long, well, they're working hard and the work ethic. I love the work ethic. And I'm like, yeah, you know, this was their best season in quite a few years. They played their best hockey since the 2020 playoff bubble, essentially. You know, that's great. But did anybody really feel excited? And, you know, this style, to an extent, can be successful. I think blocking shots that they did for a full 82-game season is bullshit. You're just breaking your players down before it matters most. But if you were going to try and replicate, you know, the 1999 New Jersey Devils, fine. You know, it may not be the most exciting hockey, but you're competent, you're winning games because of it, it's a strategy, fine. But there's no anticipation right now. And that point, you know, it can't be excitement, it can't be anything you can see on the internet after it is concluded. In this current state of this team, anything that ultimately ends up happening always ends up on Twitter, right? If Travis Konechny scores a highlight reel goal. Every personality and blog is going to steal the same exact video, claim it's their own, and put it out there and show the world Travis Konecny's amazing goal for all their likes and retweets, right? You're going to see that action. But is anybody buying a ticket anticipating Konecny is going to score that highlight reel goal that night? This isn't Connor McDavid. If you buy a ticket to go watch the Oilers, you know for a fact Connor McDavid is probably going to do something incredible that night, and you're going to get your money's worth. There is anticipation to see him. That is one area that the Flyers lack so heavily right now, is anticipation. There's nothing that makes that worth it. It's the star power. So you can sit here and admit that they're playing better, that, you know, Garnet Hathaway and Nick Seeler, you know, their work ethic and what they're doing makes sense, and you're putting on a decent product, but it's not drawing yet. The Flyers front office, this new Briere, Jones, Tortorella regime, they have tried so hard to pander. And a lot of it has come in the form of shit that doesn't matter. Oh, the center ice logos. Oh, the work ethic. They're doing this and that. And, you know, that doesn't sell. And it certainly is not a long-term strategy. You know, building on culture is not a long-term strategy. It's something you're going to try and sell in the very, very short term that it works. But that's going to wear off. If they don't do anything of substance this summer and run back a nearly identical roster, and nothing changes greatly next season, maybe nothing at all, maybe they even take a step back, you know, that's the kind of shit that's not going to work. Oh, man, you're going to buy tickets for the double center ice logo back. You're going to watch the, you know, flaming trash can rolling back and forth out there. But God damn it, there's a double center ice logo. You know, like, the people, the percentage of people that something like that appeals to is significantly lower than what having star players on this team would do. And it's the biggest thing that, I mean, Jesus Christ, we've talked about this on every episode for years now. The lack of star power and the organizational ineptitude to acquire that star power, right? I mean, this is not a new topic, but that word anticipation, like, I think that is such a critical piece of all of this that's missing. You know, to hear Sonnen phrase this the way that he did, I really wanted to read that quote to everyone. And, you know, the psychology of the fan. That first line, you would not believe how many executives in MMA, people who have been doing this for 20 years, do not understand what it is they're doing. My first thought when I heard that was Chuck Fletcher? That guy spent 20 years in this business and had no goddamn clue what he was doing. And now it's up to this regime to try and figure it out. And they're taking a lot of pandering routes. They're trying to appease to the boomers rather than try and building a modern-day product. And there's not a lot of anticipation from me, that's for sure. You know, I'm going into this offseason with very low expectations. I'm not expecting to enjoy turning them on the television next year. I'm not expecting, you know, anybody worth a shit. I'm not expecting their power play to be fixed because they flat out said they wouldn't fucking do it during Breer's exit interviews. You know, there's a lot of that stuff that you're still lacking what it means to have a good sports product. You know, yeah, he was talking about this in the term of MMA, but I think that that holds true for anybody. Your goal as a sports organization is to sell tickets. It's to put asses in seats. It's to move merchandise. And the Flyers just aren't there yet. If they, you know, they had new jerseys this year, so everyone went out and bought these new shitty jerseys they have. And if they didn't do that, I mean, who on this team are you buying a jersey for right now? Cam York? Tyson Forrester? I'm sure there's some Konecny dingbats out there that want it. And everyone has to get their Sean Couturier jersey with a C. But really, you know, is there that one guy that's moving jersey sales right now? Oh, you know. And so much, like, this is stuff that would even go back to, you know, guys like Johnny Gaudreau. You know, from a hockey perspective, fucking, there's a whole, I'm going to work myself up talking about this guy, so fair warning here, but you know, the whole reason you would buy, you would bring in Gaudreau in the first place is so people would buy the fucking jerseys. Can you imagine the pandering they could do with hometown hero Johnny Gaudreau here doing his thing? You know, it's just, he had 60 points this year, which was easily second on the Flyers. He had 74 points last year, which I believe was first on the Flyers. Like, I just... It's the kind of business decisions that I was baffled they didn't make at the time. Well, this contract won't last. Yeah, neither does any other fucking contract that's on the books right now. You gotta do it. You gotta do what you gotta do to invest people in what it is that you're trying to sell. And I'm not there yet, man. Like, I am not invested yet. And if they take a very similar approach this summer that they did last year and that they've done the last handful of years, which is nothing, you know, hey, we're going to bring in a Garnet Hathaway clone and call it a summer, you know, it's just, it doesn't do it. And I think that it's the worst thing that they can do to themselves right now as a front office is try and run back a minimalistic product. I don't think it's going to work forever. I think Briere's got a lot of good grace from the fans, but if you go out there and burn that bridge a lot quicker through sheer ineptitude and roster construction, you know, it's going to put a little more pressure on themselves to make it happen. All, you know, if they run it back this summer, then they're still, you know, in the bubble on the outside looking in, come to the trade deadline. Well, then there's more pressure on themselves to do something at the deadline and more pressure on themselves in the summer. You know, if they slowly but surely integrate this over time, and listen, I've been talking about this for a long time now. I don't need a Stanley Cup next season, but I need them to put one foot in front of the other and show that they're capable of building towards something. They're capable of going from, you know, step one to step two to step three and getting through this rebuild, quote unquote, getting better every year and leading towards that ultimate goal of being a Cup contender, you know. And if that comes in the form of trading Farabee, Frost, and a first-round pick for Trevor Zegras this summer, then so be it. You know, it may not be pretty, it may not be easy, but you're taking a step forward. You're indicating that you're willing to make those moves, and it's the one thing Breer hasn't done yet. There's been movement, he's made trades, but you have not seen him make an addition of note yet. A fourth-round pick for Eric Johnson is not a goddamn good trade. You need that good trade. You need to be able to show that you're capable, as a front office, to build that anticipation, to prove that you're leading towards something. And it is a aspect that I think has been missing for a very, very long time from the Flyers. And when he ended up, and when Chael Sonnen was talking about this, I had to go back and transcribe this and read this to you all, because I thought that was a brilliant descriptor of where they're at. You're lacking the anticipation, and you need to do something that you want to buy a ticket for. I want to buy a ticket to watch a good player play hockey. I don't want to watch, you know, Connor McDavid is a good example of this one. If you're buying a ticket to see the Oilers, you know Connor McDavid is going to do something spectacular that night. It's just going to happen, you know. It's the anticipation of getting to see him live. Who are you going to pay to watch on the Flyers? Which player in particular? Any of them? None of them. There's not a single fucking dude here that I want to spend money to watch play hockey live. None of them. That's what's missing from this team. So, I really like that quote. I really wanted to go about it here because, man, it's a good way to phrase that. And he's right. You know, the business is anticipation. You got to buy the tickets. You got to do this and that. And, you know, when Johnny Gaudreau signed in Columbus, to go back to that one, how many tickets did they sell in a short amount of time? You know, the tickets... The season tickets are out the ass. Connor Bedard in Chicago, when they won the fucking draft pick. They sold out, what, a couple thousand season tickets in 2 hours or whatever it was? You know, it's the anticipation of getting to watch something good and not just pretend the mediocre nobodies that the Flyers have are good. There's so many fucking people that, oh, Morgan Frost is the greatest hockey player that ever lived. Travis Konechny, he's a star. That's a 40-point forward and a 60-point forward. Who fucking cares? People like that don't watch other hockey other than the Flyers. There's no way you can turn on playoff hockey and come to the conclusion that Morgan Frost is a good hockey player. It's impossible. He's not on the level of any of these guys. He would not be a top six center on any fucking playoff team right now. The exception of maybe the Capitals. Who are barely a playoff team. You know, the same boat the Flyers are. They just happen to be the biggest loser to make it. I don't know. But I had to get this rant off my chest. It's been like 2 days since that episode dropped, and I've just been ready to rant about it. But it's just true. It can't be the excitement. It can't be the greatness. It can't be a spectacle. It can't be anything that you can see on the internet after it concludes. It has to be the feeling that comes prior to make you buy the ticket, to pick up the t-shirt, to host the party, to push the buy button. It has to be ahead of time. It has to be anticipation. This is perfectly said. Perfectly said for how you manage a sports team. How you, as a organization, sell tickets, you know. Even just within Philadelphia, you're probably buying a ticket for the Philadelphia Phillies to watch Bryce Harper play that night. You're probably buying a ticket to the Sixers to see what Joel Embiid's going to do that night. You know, the Flyers just don't have that. They don't even have one of those guys. And these dingbat contributors that try their best to pretend Travis Konecny and Morgan Frost are, you know, they're doing the team's dirty work. This organization doesn't have to do shit. If they can convince you that Morgan Frost is a good player, they don't have to do anything. So, just some food for thought as the offseason continues here. I guess we'll call it a day. I've somehow ranted 42 minutes by myself. Oh, God. Oh, well. But, hey! The Flyerside Chat converting to the Tip to Tip podcast on its new platform. We just recorded a commercial a couple hours ago, actually, as of me recording this. But that'll be up in the next couple days. It'll have all the info that you need for the new show returning at Tip to Tip Pod on Twitter for links and whatnot. So you can check that out. At Dan the Fly, at Brotherly Puck, at Brotherly _ Bod. Plenty of shit on the website, brotherlypuck.com. And, we'll be back with other people, I'm sure, sooner or later. I don't know. I'm enjoying these solo shows. Get to talk unopposed. Who needs co-host? I'm Dan the Flyer Fan. I should mention, by the way, tell this story real quick, but at the Phantoms games, I typically sit behind the bar at Section 108 there because they've got the nice stools and nice little counter there. Significantly better seating than the actual arena seats, which leads to random people sitting next to me pretty much every game. And boy, howdy, there are some characters that show up there. And this past game, the playoff game, two little, short, gray-haired Asian ladies, older Asian ladies, sat next to me. And y'all, they were a riot. They were so much fucking fun to sit next to. Knew what they were talking about. They knew hockey. They knew everything. They were fucking funny, man. They were cracking jokes the whole time. Holy shit. I was ready to fire the entire Brotherly Pod staff and pay these two to show up and do shows with me every single week. That's how... Oh, so much fun. But y'all are out there listening. Come on back. Oh, man. I should have got their contact info. Brought them on even as guests one time. Ah. Oh, wow. Live and let live, I guess, right? So I won't fire the entire Brotherly Pod staff yet. Maybe one day, but, you know, we'll burn that bridge when we get there, right? All right, everyone. At Dan the Flyer Fan. And until next time, everyone, goodbye and good night.